ball is high towards the Taylor. Walsh got there ahead of him though. On care plays it back in again. And no offside. And Taylor has scored. And that surely means it's the Premier League for Swindon Town now.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Washbag Podcast. It is your host here, Chris Panks. I'm today joined by Matthew Kilford.
Hello.
Local musician. We're not allowed to call you singer-songwriter anymore.
No, no, we won't even dwell on that. It's about Swindon today, but yeah, horrible term.
Yeah, I do have one music-related question. The chant, Come On You Reds.
Yeah.
Why have they picked two such discordant notes so close together? Do we need some kind of composer to make sure that the U and Reds are very...
You know. I have no idea. The one thing I say is that it's only just now in the last couple of years that I've been able to sing along with the town and the pitch they start when they sing. I could never reach those high notes. They've got these like amazing sort of Jeff Buckley type pitch ranges, quite extraordinary for some of the males, and that some of them should take up singing professionally.
Sopranos.
Yeah, they're better than some of the other teams I've heard. So yeah.
So at least we can win at singing.
Yeah, we can. Yeah, choral.
I'm not just here with Matt Kilford. I'm also joined by editor Ron, editor of thewashbag.com.
Evening, Chris.
Evening. You all right?
Yeah, very good, thank you.
Just need to check that you are an editor in the sense of an arbiter of truth rather than a Kelvin McKenzie type.
No, well, no, not like Kelvin McKenzie, no.
That's good, because otherwise...
Fortunately not, no.
I would need to have you ejected from the Earth using one of Richard Branson's... commercial rockets.
My word, this is going over my head. Yeah. I'm definitely local. Carry on, sorry.
Anyway, I hope you brought your guitar today, Matt, because there's barely anything to talk about. We're going to run out in about 5 minutes flat. Where do we begin? Let's start with some context, I suppose. Yeah. Let's start with where we ended last time. There was an ongoing row between manager Paolo Di Canio and former captain Paul Caddis. Mm-hmm. But nobody seemed to be that bothered because we'd just beaten Brighton 3-0 in the League Cup.
Yeah.
We were unbeaten in the league and hadn't conceded in the league. Mm-hmm. Now where are we?
Well, yeah, it's a couple of weeks on. Beaten Stoke, but three defeats. Paul Caddis has suddenly sort of reared his head in terms of the fans a bit more about him departing.
Yes.
But, you know... It's been and gone now, isn't it, really?
Well, who could have thought that the last time that we would see him in that town shirt would be against Crystal Palace in the pre-season friendly?
Yes, yeah.
I wasn't even there for that game because I was away, so I didn't even see that. So the last thing I saw of him was...
Well, I was there at the Palace game, but it doesn't bring back any memories of Caddis. No, it didn't jump out at me. Particularly before.
Maybe this is Paolo's plan, that he's just caused all this fuss, so we kind of forget about poor Caddis. Maybe that's it, but then I don't know.
Caddis doesn't seem to be playing along, does he? He's given an interview, I think, to the Mirror, where he
was it the Football League paper.
Football League paper. Yeah, last
the
Sunday.
Back page.
I haven't read it though.
I had a look at the Mirror's version of it, so I don't know quite how true that is.
Probably better than the Sun.
I mean, some people were sort of saying he was trying to engineer his way out of the club, perhaps if he came...
I think he's been engineered halfway already, hasn't
he? Yeah, no, exactly. But it's sort of obviously, you know, when he came back, sort of pre-season training, he perhaps knew straight away he was on a bit of a losing side with Di Canio, particularly with the fitness levels, like Di Canio said, and obviously sort of set out his stall that he wants to depart.
Yeah, I think from Saturday there's been a lot of talk, especially on the Townham Forum, about this, and there's quite a few people in the know apparently things that's gone on, and I think even a thread got removed at some point, which is always interesting. I always like when a thread gets removed because I want to know more
advice.
Yeah, probably. So there's something's been going on. We'll never know. We will if we ask the right people, but I think it's just a case of just moving on. It's happened. It doesn't seem like he's going to come back anytime soon.
No.
I mean, it's not as if we didn't lose games at the start of last season. We did, you know, Caddis in the side as well. I mean, De Vera was around. He was playing centre back at the time, wasn't he? But
I suppose I'm less worried about the results on the pitch as to the precedent it sets within the rest of the squad. You know, Paul Caddis has been.
Yeah.
He was our player of the season last season, wasn't he?
Yeah, player of the year. Yeah.
Very, very well deserved, I would say. We sat around this table.
He eventually convinced you.
Yeah, you did. You convinced me. You did. That's very true. Good memory, bro.
And he has been here for years, and kind of he stayed with us when we went down to League Two. Mm-hmm. It just does seem that there is no room for sentimentality in Paolo Di Canio's regime. I hesitate to use the term regime.
No, you're exactly right. And he said in the advert on Friday about, obviously, you know, his way or the highway. And Di Canio's just, again, just stating the bleeding obvious, really, is that we already know that, you know, he doesn't suffer any fools gladly. He obviously expects people to come into play, you know, his way, mentality his way. And to be honest, you don't expect any different, really. And any manager, obviously, Di Canio has his own certain way, and he obviously puts a lot out there in the press.
Sure. I think it's very interesting with the new people coming in, especially Matt Ritchie signing, extending his contract. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's the argument saying he could be doing that, so it means we can get more money if we do sell him on. There is that argument, if you're looking at it from that way. But the way that he talks and saying they're going in the same direction. So, you know, if there was anyone who was closer to Paul Caddis, it's Matt Ritchie. So that's the complete opposite. So it goes to show that it's more of a personal thing with Caddis, that something's happened, rather than maybe the Di Canio way. It doesn't affect everyone. It seems some people are quite happy to go, you know, go with it and know they're going to learn something. Bostock wouldn't have come back if that was the case. Let's face it, he would have seen, and he came back, you know, from the pub gate or whatever it was called, and he saw all that, and he saw how Di Canio, and he must have been there when Tuhui was there as well.
He would have been around when it's gone.
So he's seen all this, and for Bostock to come back, you know, the guy's not an idiot. I wouldn't think, anyway. Or his agent's not an idiot.
Yeah.
So this talk about Di Canio being this, being that, I don't think it's as bad as you think. I think it's about instilling this new, he's got new players, he's got to get back into his way that he had to do kind of before last season. It's just that I was talking about it last time, it's the worry of these older players coming down from the Championship are setting their ways and they're getting a kick up the arse. He's already talking about Navarro saying, well, we would warm down like this, we would warm down like this. He's saying, well, you're not there.
Yeah. I saw that interview today on the BBC website. I think it probably came from the advert originally. Mm.
As most things do.
Really. Yeah, we've got to give those guys credit.
Mm. And BBC Wiltshire, of course.
Of course,
Of course.
That goes without saying.
Yes.
But having said that, you know, he clearly has an idea of what he wants from a player, which is fine. But sometimes you kind of worry if that attitude sometimes will put players off. And how far can you go until no player wants to come, or no player that's good enough wants to come to Swindon?
There'll always be players. I mean, and obviously so far has already proven, I don't know how many he's come through to date and how many he's brought to the club, but we're well over 40.
Yeah, well, I think that he's been allowed to do that by the board.
Yeah, and as much as it's only going to last as long as the board are willing to support him, because essentially the club have been able to offer, I presume, quite good financial packages to a lot of the players to come here as well. Perhaps a compensation to put up with Di Canio, perhaps. As long as the board are willing to support him, there's always going to be players who are willing to come here, and Di Canio depends on the amount that, you know, the agents push him, players coming in.
And it's about him having a very strong idea about what he wants from his playing staff, isn't it?
I think it's really interesting watching an interview with him talking on the official site, and he was talking about results aren't the most important thing at the moment. He's more worried about on how they're setting up and how they're playing and their belief and the way they play. And he's saying that as long as we do that, we will get we will win more than we lose. And I think that is a brilliant mentality.
Yeah.
He's not worried about results. He's more worried about they're not doing the things that they know that he knows they can do, which we've seen.
So I was going to say, especially at this time of the season, as last season shows, that you can have a really sort of a poor start last season, indifferent all the way through to November, and then you can just hit the ground running. It's all about Bill using that first 2 months of the season to build up the momentum. He's got so many new players in this year, a lot more than perhaps at the end of last season that we thought he would actually have in the first team. So he's actually got a
squad size is going to come into that when these players start picking up injuries. Like, I know we've had a few at the moment, but he's still got the players there, although I know the results aren't quite right. But you can see that when the players are on form, the squad is going to be very, very good.
He's had to bring in new people as well, because there are two extra seats on the bench that he needs to fill as well. So
that means four, doesn't it?
But it's such a shame on that point. I mean, one of the, I mean, when you did the blog, I think back in June, about the additional substitutes this year, that he hasn't been able to sort of include more youth team players to sort of fill those spaces, get the, their experience.
I think the actions of Tacani over the last couple of weeks really narrowed down the type of player that would be willing to come to Swindon, I think.
Yeah.
You're certainly not going to do it if you're an ageing professional looking for your last move, because one mistake and you could be out. You're certainly not going to do it if you're a youth player, because you're not going to get the game time to do it. So it's a very, you know, 24 to 26, it seems to be that sort of
Well, he has brought in Miller and Navarro, and they're...
And he has brought in Collins, Chris. Sorry to dampen on your thing there. I don't even think it's like
I'm talking about onwards from now.
Yeah, I think it's just like you say. I think it's just a certain player mentally. I think it's that they need to be just have a very good work ethic. Yeah. And there are, you can see Andy Williams has that. Yeah. You can see James Collins has that.
Particularly as well, because the amount of sort of good words that De Canio's had about Williams so far this season. He hasn't scored a goal. I mean, I keep saying every week in the match previews, Williams is going to get a goal this week, etc. Mm. He hasn't done. He's been close so many times, but nobody can fault his effort. And De Canio can see that, recognises it, gets the praise.
Yeah, which is interesting because him and... I'm not saying him and Connell are completely the same player, but they go about the game in the same way. Very good professional, but Williams is clearly a bit more talented. You can see that.
Mm-hmm. Certainly in terms of technique, touch, pace, it's unbelievable.
And he's a lot stronger than you would... He doesn't seem the biggest sort of guy until you start seeing him up against other players and you realise he's got that stock to be able to... And that little touch where he can flick it and turn it over past the defender. I think he's going to be an invaluable squad player as the season goes on.
I agree with you. We talked briefly there about how the season started last year and how the form improved. And that sort of came about when Wes Fodringham came in.
Mm-hmm.
He's also been at the centre of Paolo's ire.
Yeah, just a tad.
Let's have a quick talk about that. So, Preston North End, it's a miserable time going to Preston, isn't it? I once spent there, I spent 4 hours there waiting for a train, and I would not recommend it to anybody, even those who live in Oxford.
Okay.
So, for those who have been living under a rock for the last 2 weeks, Wesley Fodringham, a 21-year-old goalkeeper, was hauled off...
After about 21 minutes,
yes. Thoughts?
Well, I mean, if De Canio wants to do that, I mean, he's not the first goalkeeper to have been taken off for poor performance on the pitch. Obviously, it's surprising it was only after 21 minutes. I wasn't there to... really sort of see how bad it was, but pretty much not many fans complained about it being taken off. And, you know, having seen the highlights and his reaction straight away afterwards, no wonder he really got it in the ear, you know, post-match, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, player can't come off. I mean, you know, you see it occasionally, players coming off, kick the ball, water bottle, throw a paddy. I mean, De Canio was the worst anyway, banging the side of the dugout every 5 minutes.
Yeah, De Canio never has a paddy.
But no, he hates to see himself in players, and that's what I think in terms of
that's a really
reaction,
good point.
I do think that De Canio does dislike certain elements about his own character. He sees it in other people and really, really tries to stamp it out of them.
Wow, you could like get into psychology.
I don't think so. No.
Wow, no. That's really good. I've never thought of that before, that's a good point. Whether you'll be proven or not, I don't know. I think it was one thing that came out of it, and whether you're angry at De Canio or not, I felt sorry for Lee Bedwell. He was coming off it. That was his debut, wasn't it? For Wes to not even acknowledge him when you see the footage and to do that, I think that's probably what made De Canio, you know, and it's just not a nice thing. Whether you're hauled off, you know, as De Canio said, he wasn't hauled off for the mistake. He was hauled off for his attitude, and what he was saying to the other players,
and apparently Paolo had been unhappy at his performance at
Stoke.
Which I've seen a few people say actually, yeah, he was really bad at Stoke. He was the only player that didn't come off.
Playing the Premiership team away from home, so it's kind of
it's
a league. It's a guy in his second season.
But you could still have a good performance.
Yeah, but how much do you expect? How much does De Canio expect of his players? It's
He only expects of what they give him before, and Fodren, he knows how good that boy can be, and if he's slacking, he's going to tell him, because that's his job. It was quite interesting, if you watched the goal on Saturday, he's beating his near post. Yeah. How often was Vic, you know, we were actually sat here, and he was saying he's never had seen a better keeper at Swindon with a bishop. So yeah. he's not on tour, although he was, you know, he did an okay job on Saturday, and, you know, there wasn't any sort of mistakes.
No, but Oren only had one shot on goal.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the goal.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he didn't really have much.
We're racing ahead. There's We need to.
You could.
We
go
need
back
to prolong the misery. That's so. We've spoken about the first half at Preston North End. That goal that ended 4-1, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Very disappointing day.
But it could have been 8-1. I think that was Di Canio's point, because they were kept distracting each other. So he says it could have been 8-1, but I brought them off. It only turned up 4-1. That's what you said.
It could have been 2-1 as well.
It could have been 2-1, yep.
Anyway, so we'll move on from, we'll park that. I think that the difficulty for me with his actions that day, and I was sat in my room listening to BBC Wiltshire, seething on my own, you know, so angry that I actually phoned up 606.
Wow. Wow.
Did you get on?
I did get on, yeah.
You did, okay.
Yeah.
Who's the presenter on 606 now?
It was Darren Fletcher, I believe.
Okay.
I quite like Darren.
Did you get Robbie Savage?
No, Savage was doing the Saturday show. I think Darren was on his own, in fact. Mm. Anyway, I was angry. I was really angry because he doesn't like to see what his... Yeah, no, I've never thought about it that way before. And he, you know, I think that's probably quite true. Mm. The comments that I was most upset about were the hypocrisy that was rife in them.
Mm.
At the end of the game, where he was talking about Wes wasn't a professional until he brought him there, because
talking about the height of Wes, not giving him a chance.
He gave him a chance. Yes, yeah. Brilliant. Absolutely understand that. But Wes has worked hard to get to a stage where he was going to be in that position anyway, first thing. Mm. Secondly, Swindon Town gave you a chance, Paolo.
Now, and are still giving him a
chance. You know, I think that some of the blanket approval of kind of what Di Canio does, as long as we keep winning.
Yeah.
He was talking a little about trading on past glories.
Mm.
In the same sentence, he talked about winning the league last year.
Yeah, yeah.
So
okay.
it's a bit...
It's different, like you said, like Jeremy Ray did say on, you know, do that interview again in Italian and listen to what he said. And he could probably word it better, and he could probably, because he could probably say things differently, because it's just how it is.
Articulation. No, I agree with you.
But you're right, saying like that, it is a bit...
And Ray did a very good job on the Monday Night Club to kind of play that down.
Yeah,
he did a very good politician.
Ray with a W. I thought you were talking about some guy called Ray. My brain,
So we'll move on from Preston. And the next game, up at them lot, up the A420.
Mm, down the road, yeah.
Why can't we beat them? They're rubbish.
It was different this time because of the late mistake, wasn't it? So, I mean, Di Canio believes that if it would have went to penalties as he had expected it to do long before the end of the 90, we would have sort of seen it through perhaps on the penalties, but I'm still not wanting to rely on that. But
and then Ward ran into Flint.
Yeah.
That's the other way around. I still don't know how people...
Just a massive collision.
Just a massive collision. And you're going to get mistakes at this level.
And that's the difference. Like last season, there was so little mistakes, and we've just had so many within a 2-3 week period, whether it be Fodringham, the defence,
it's interesting to think as to whether there were fewer mistakes last season or we weren't capitalised as well because of the substandard opposition.
Perhaps a bit of both. I haven't got stats on mistake, so perhaps I should include that now, actually. But
yeah, I certainly...
The cock-up column.
There were chances for sides, particularly at the top end of League Two last season, to get more out of games than they actually went away with. And I think that a lot of the time it was Wes that was kind of the one that saved us, because I think of Shrewsbury, I think of Crawley, those games could have gone the other way. Torquay, If those games go the other way, that ends our run, stops our momentum. Mm. B, the 3 points that we've gained there are now neutralised into 1 point each.
Sure.
So it's not an advantage of 2 points.
Mm.
And thirdly, you lose a bit of confidence as well, because how long... it was sort of 10 clean sheets in a row, wasn't it?
I can't remember. It seems so long ago now.
Wasn't it? Yeah. Went up until the Shrewsbury...
10 clean sheets game. At home, I think. At home, the stats. So, and I think we spoke about it on the end of season podcast last year. 17 of those points... We would have lost 17 points if we'd have drawn those games. That we won by a single goal.
But you can go about this, and I don't want to start doing the David Mitchell and Webb thing where it's football and no one ever wins the football. But of course, games can always swing either way. The fact is that we did well enough to hold out those games, and we are in League One. And the easiest and quick answer of it, I know I'm trying to sort of sum it up on a podcast, when the best thing about podcasts is you can just chat for ages about it, is that the opposition is better. And you saw it with the Leighton Orient game, that people, Lisby and Cook, are a better quality player in the same way that we have better quality players. And people like McCormack and Flint, when they do make a mistake, are going to get caught out more than they would in League Two.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
No, I certainly think that's a really good point, in that we are in League One. I mean, all of us around the table predicted, would be nice to have a top 10 finish.
Mm.
None of us went, we're going to win the league this year. It's going to be a more difficult year than it was last year. Expect mistakes. We're going to lose at home. We're going to concede some goals and just get on with it.
But the thing is, we're being very rational about that, and we're all agreeing. But I don't think that is necessarily reflected in Di Canio's actions over the last couple of weeks.
No,
and I don't know if that's going to put extra pressure on the players. Mm. I don't know how that's going to... Or if it's going to elicit a reaction from them.
We've always got to go into a game... to win, haven't you? But it's just going to be a more difficult season this year, isn't it?
We're
going to have to get used to maybe losing at home.
Yeah.
I think I read something that Vic said, that we're going to have to get used to it, which is a strange thing. I always say this, that League One, I think, and this, I know this is the league that Swindon have been in most of its history.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's my least favourite league. Yeah. Always has been. League Two is so much more romantic, usually because you're doing quite well, but I always have so much better memory. So it's such a much more romantic league with crappier grounds, but there's something about it. League One is just full of... people from it's that people have come down from the higher the high division, and some of them are still pushing on, but it's just it's my least favourite league, and I can see why the board are trying to think this is their chance, strike while the iron is hot, giving those players what he wants, let's get in the championship, if Paolo goes let's just still try and keep up there, because that's where the Premier League 2 is
Premier League 2,
what they're calling or whatever it's going to begin. But
if you had said those words more than 2 years ago, as Swindon fans, we're going to have to get used to losing at home.
Mm.
You would have been carted off to the nearest psychiatric ward.
It's not a case of. But I think what I mean is that we're just going to have to get used to.
Which is kind of indicative of the progress that we've had under Di Canio as well.
Yeah, I mean that season when we got relegated, it was the amount of home games you go to and would just get defeated. I mean,
perhaps I'm being overly cautious and negative, but I just worry about the means rather than the end.
I mean, and what everyone's got to remember is that run that we had was, I can't remember what it was now, so it was 28 home games without defeat, which equaled a club record. Just look back at what a fantastic achievement it was.
Yeah.
It's awful losing against Leighton Orient, but just remember all of the games. It was over, just over a year that we went without seeing.
I think it's a wake up call, isn't it? And that's what I think. That's what they need. I think it's all these little things now to realise that they do need to up their game.
Yeah.
Or else it could go on for where you have a really great start, and then it could all go bad around Christmas when the games. Then again, the games are coming thick and fast now, aren't they?
Yeah.
Let's end this part by talking a little bit more about Orient. Mm. They didn't have a point before they came to the County Ground and have left with three.
Mm.
You said that they only had one shot on target,
which
inevitably was the winner.
Yeah.
How were Swindon attacking wise? I was at the Paralympics, unfortunately, so you need to fill me in on this one, guys.
Mm. You go first.
Yeah, it was just the midfield just wasn't providing the chances for the front pair, and it just wasn't provide. You know, there wasn't the space. And
who started? Was it Navarro?
No, sure, I think it was Navarro and Miller started. Everyone was clamouring for Ferry. You know, Bostock stayed on the bench the entire game.
Mm.
That was another sort of surprise.
I think the thing was that the midfield was getting bypassed, whereas before they were playing it out and they were playing it through the midfield. If you remember first half of the Milton Keynes game, it seems weird saying Milton Keynes as a franchise. Sorry.
Yeah.
I just remember the pace. I think I saw you at halftime, Chris. Yeah. And I was saying that they're playing so much quicker, faster tempo this season. I know why he wants these players that can get the ball and pass it on.
Yeah.
That then changed when the player got sent off for Milton Keynes. But then the Orient game, Flint and McCormack were just banging the ball, bypassing the midfield. And I don't know if that was because of the tactics of what Orient were doing that they needed to get out to him, but I think it's fair to say that although they can hold, that Williams can hold the ball up, I think they're more dangerous in the final third with their head and being able to turn and spin rather than kind of like doing the Benson role, which he did so well. I still think Benson is still probably our best forward for that, being able to get the ball and lay it off for people, bring others into play. But that never happened because Leighton Orient were winning all the headers, and it was Navarro and Miller were playing too deep because they're naturally now two defensive midfield players, and Ferry wasn't
point.
In there. Yeah. Ferry, when Ferry came on, it changed. It made them got them guessing about where Ferry was going to be, but there was almost too much shape. There wasn't enough creativity there.
I mean, it wasn't an unusual defeat in this or a team that we struggled against in the sense that it was just physical. They were well organised, and again, that they were the sort of teams that we struggled against last year. When you talk about the Bradfords, who we didn't win against last year, and some of the other sort of the fighting teams, it just does seem to be a bit of a sort of a continuum through Di Canio's reign that there is a certain type of opponent who can turn up and pretty much undermine your game plan the way that sort of Exeter did famously a couple of years ago in our sort of run to the game against Millwall.
And they were better if you then sort of think, well, they weren't, Leighton Orient did a job on us, but then if you actually sit and think about what sort of players they had compared to most League Two sides last season, they were a much higher level. I think, and they worked well as a team. They were organised. I think everything out of them was what we're talking about, was just a step up. And that day we didn't manage to, do anything against them.
We've got no God-given right to win every game, so...
No.
Anyway, that'll be the end of part one. In part two, we're going to park all of that stuff from the past and look misty-eyed into the future. Okay, we're back. Back with the Washpad podcast. I'm still joined by Matt Kilford and Ron Smith. We're going to talk about some of the people that came in. We spent a lot of the first half talking about people that are looking like they're going out. Paul Caddis. We didn't mention Oliver Rissa, but nobody seems to have really missed him yet.
Not yet.
John Bostock. Talk to me about John.
We didn't think he was going to come back, did we?
No.
It just didn't seem like it. And then it was like, oh, suddenly he's appeared. I think, I did say in the previous part, I said I'm surprised that he came back, but that shows me that it's good that things are, things can't be that bad within the squad that he comes back. It's interesting how he's going to be used because he is really a luxury player. I still don't know if he's good enough to be a centre midfield player. He's definitely not a forward. You could put him out wide, but he loves that, that old sort of Peter Beardsley behind the front. Show me age there, aren't I? just behind the striker.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got a sneaky feeling, and I'm going to be probably proved completely wrong, but I've got a sneaky feeling he might start with that tomorrow. I don't know why. I just think he might do it. Doesn't necessarily work. We still got beat by Gillingham 3-1 when he started and did that role, but I think that might work. Certainly, that's the only time I can see him starting at the moment is away when we play one up front and just break it up.
I think away, yeah, definitely that would work. Certainly, in terms of plugging the midfield, especially that's going to make it difficult for Carlisle to pass through the midfield.
Mm.
They'll have to rely on. I'm not sure if he's still starting JP McGovern on out wide.
He
seems to be doing okay.
Doing really good for them.
The highlights that I can see on Football League Show.
Yeah.
So I think that will be a key battle.
Mm.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. John Bostock may start tomorrow.
Yeah, he is. He is a luxury player. I've been surprised that he's not. He's still sticking with De Vita, who's. He was okay. He didn't get as many crosses in on Saturday as he has done in the past.
It's all going to depend on when Roberts is back from injury.
Yeah, and I've not caught because I didn't go to the Palace game, so I've not seen Roberts play yet. Yeah. So, which I'm obviously really excited about.
Very accurate with the crossing.
Yeah. And very quick as well. Yeah. Deceptively quick.
Okay.
Very, very good.
So looking forward to getting him back.
You did just mention JP McGovern. The season when we got to play Millwall in the playoff final. That season, JP got 18 assists and Roberts got 17 assists that season for Huddersfield. So, but if you sort of think he's that sort of player, he would just generate so many more chances.
And
that was really just one good season for Swindon, though, wasn't it? That was his best season.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. So I think Bostock will be used in many different forms, hopefully, because he's a talented lad and he needs to play. And he's coming down here because he knows he's going to at least be part of a team that's doing something rather than be stuck with the reserves and not really part of anything.
And on that point, what you say about Bostock, he's going to be used perhaps sparingly, hopefully quite a bit, depending on who we play. But when he does play, he is going to be the centre of the team. It's going to be played through him. And I think that he realises that. And to kind of that's one of the reasons why he's prepared to come here and to wait his chance.
Yeah.
He's got that playmaker brain, hasn't he? Definitely. The old.
But it's obviously, when you've got, Adam Rooney here now and you've got all the other strikers and you think you're going to, just have one up front and then Bostock behind.
It's not going to do it every week.
No, I mean,
that's clear that Adam Rooney came in as well. That was an indication that it won't be 4-5-1 every week.
No.
I think that it's an interesting way to start a game. And let's not get into the old debate of 4-5-1 versus 4-3-3 that we had under Monsieur Hart.
Oh God,
we need Alex here.
Alex is amazing. The stats that I listened to the last podcast and what he came up with, I was just like, wow, this guy needs to be on every time. I was quite impressed with Adam Rooney actually. I know he had the miss because he was being sort of manhandled by the defender.
Was that a miss or a save? I didn't see it.
I think it was a miss.
It was a miss. And the key is, he's played at a higher level. He should have gone down and he should at least got a free kick because he is obvious from. I've seen it again. He wasn't going to be able to hit the target. He should just use his brain.
But he was coming into the midfield and getting the ball, and I was quite impressed with that. He does look a bit overweight compared to the other Swindon players, which I thought was quite interesting. His arse seemed a bit bigger. Not that I'm checking guys out arses out, but he kind of had that sort of Ferry two couple of seasons ago sort of bulge about him.
A bit of chunk.
And I think he wants to get rid of that, otherwise
he'll be out.
Wow. I think, again, Bostock seems more fitter this time. He's had a better pre-season. I think he's going to be a better player for it. But I think Rooney is a definite option. I think it's pretty obvious that Williams and Collins is De Canio's future front two. That he wants to get them in now and working together. Mm. Benson has kind of been injured a bit, so we still don't know where he's fitting in. But I think Rooney is a good other option. Offers something, so I was quite impressed. I think he'll do okay.
I think that De Canio will be concerned about the lack of goals in the last three games because
and the lack of goals all season from strikers generally, isn't it?
From strikers, yes. So I think that is an interesting one and how he deals with that. I'm not quite sure. I think that.
Get another striker.
Yeah, but he said last year, didn't he? He didn't want a 20-goal striker. He'd rather it be all shared about. I think we've had seven players looking at my piece of A4 down here. Seven different scorers already this season.
Well, it was the same last year, wasn't it? Yeah. In terms of, Connell, top scorer, and he didn't have many goals at all.
No, and bless Alan, I love Alan Connell, but the amount of ones that, came off his backside or whatever.
Yeah.
He tried to claim one for Bradford against Watford in the cup, actually, exactly so that he seems to know where the shot is, and then he can get in it. And it's actually a really good strike who does that because it's got a good chance of going off him in the goal. I know it sounds like a goal poacher, but that's a really good little tactic, and he does that brilliantly.
Getting away,
adds 4-5 goals. Wait, he did 4-5 goals add onto Coddle's tally last season. He's good enough for that. But I was impressed with Rooney. I've not seen Coke play, because I didn't go to the Oxford game. But seems kind of a composed midfield player, quite tall. will do a job. I think Sheffield Wednesday fans seem to think he's pretty good. It'd be interesting to see if he's kind of played maybe with Ferry to do you know, that kind of. I think when asked what sort of midfielder he was, what was interesting was he didn't say he was defensive midfielder. He didn't say he was an attacker. He just said he is a centre midfield player. Do it all. You know, he was thinking kind of like a, you know, that, not comparing to Roy Keane, but Roy Keane can score, Roy Keane can defend, he's up and down, and I think...
Can't manage that.
Yeah, no.
Not a very good pundit.
No, but tells it like it is.
Yeah.
Who
not
else,
that I would ever say that to his face.
No, yeah. Who else did we get in? There were so many. Or maybe that was it.
Well, Darren Ward, obviously.
Darren Ward, people claiming that it was one of the worst debuts they'd ever seen. For the Oxford game,
I wasn't there to see it,
so I don't know. He's a very
which people that could be the judgment of how accurate this.
Just from general different forums and things I've seen,
it would never be as bad as Jonathan Woodgate's debut, in which he scored an own goal and got sent off.
Yeah,
for Real Madrid.
Yeah. I remember that.
That will always trump any worst day.
Top trumps, that's on his, yeah. I think he'll just add to squad. What's interesting is he's saying that he's learning things already. I saw an interview with him today. And he seems excited by it. And he was basically dissing Millwall and saying he didn't like it. I think he's basically fallen out with Kenny Jackett.
Yeah.
Darren Ward is been a very good central. He had Painter and Austin in his back pocket, didn't he, for that final?
Yeah.
Sorry to bring that up, but he's
and he's cancelling after this podcast as well.
Yeah. So I think there's a good squad there, and I think everyone should be a bit more enthusiastic shouldn't feel as bad about things going on. I think they've all died down. They've had a week's training without a game in between. Be interesting to see what happens. Most of us kind of switch off when Paolo goes into his post interview anyway, don't they? Because his vocabulary isn't I'm talking about myself now, which vocabulary isn't as good, but he does repeat himself and does the same similar things, so.
Yeah, he likes the word but, he knows that one.
Well, it's passion, but passion, desire, and I'm not going to get into that because then I see me in the street and then he'll
I don't want him to find out where I live. He talks a lot about breeds of dogs as well.
Does he?
It's like
the Chihuahuas.
Chihuahuas.
But did you see the clip? I loved it where he was talking about when he goes shopping and he's sat looking at tomatoes in the supermarket. I think this might have been in the Daily Mail, and he said that he stood there.
Oh yeah, no,
and
I did read that. That was a really good interview.
Fair play to the journalist, and he was saying how, and for people who've not read it, how he stands there and he's trying to pick tomatoes and he can't because he's thinking about the game.
Yeah.
People just think he's crazy that he doesn't know what to cook for, but he's not. He's just sat there thinking about the game.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it's in Marlborough where he probably does his shopping. So there's going to be
good. He did say Waitrose, didn't he?
Oh, did he? Okay. So yeah, there's definitely not a Waitrose in Swindon.
No, indeed. Steering slightly back towards Carlisle, they've had a similar start to the season as Swindon. They've only won one at home. And there's a 1-1 lost one at home. Scoring record 4 is quite good, but they've also conceded 5 goals in those 2 games. Worrying for Swindon is that they've only scored 1 goal away from home in the league, so it's that lack of goals that we spoke about previously that might I can see it's petering out into a 0-0 or there just being a deciding goal between them.
They haven't had the best starts at home, have they, in the league, but I think they've won their cup games.
They've had a very similar
in the home, so yeah, very very similar starts of the season. Similar perhaps expectations as Swindon going into the season with the hope of getting into the playoffs. I mean, they had quite good periods last year in the league. But we've rarely had. It's so far to go up there, up to Carlisle, and we haven't really had the best of trips up there.
It's not been too bad. We've won up there with Painter and Austin. With Austin scoring a goal.
Yeah,
and,
it was his second last visit. I think it's 1-0 victory.
Austin scored. They seem like a bit of a bogey team. We don't necessarily have such a.
Yeah.
We don't have an impressive record against them, you know what I mean? But We should salute any travelling fans.
Definitely.
Of course, Vic Morgan, regular contributor to this show, is
yeah,
one of them.
He's hopefully on a... do the match report, I think.
Is he okay?
Yeah, so helping out with that one.
Tune into the washbag.com to read that on Sunday-ish.
That'd be Monday morning.
Monday morning.
Yeah.
He's actually on a coach as we record this, so wow. Fair play to Vic, going all the way from Devon.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
mental. I think Carlisle are your typical League One side that you have to get a result. You know, as long as we don't lose tomorrow, not to sound sort of negative, and we need to get. But I think as long as we just stop this, it's not even a rot. It's early season. Mm. It's just I think it's the teams, just and the players figuring each other out. Mm. And once you get 15 games into the season, everything will start to kind of merge. Yeah, it'd be great if we can win tomorrow, and it'd be nice to see Andy Williams. Get a goal. I think that'd be a real good bonus.
I think that's definitely key. Is to actually not lose tomorrow, and just to see Williams or someone who hasn't scored this season or someone have a really good performance who hasn't already sort of come through and fodging them. Hopefully,
as long as we don't go all the way up there to get spanked 0-0 like we did against Hartlepool on the first game of the season.
Didn't Williams say that he only scored something like 3 or 4 goals by December last season, and then it ended up getting like 16-17? So he scored like 10 or 12 goals in the last 3-4 months of the season.
Oh, really?
That was in an interview, I think, after one of the games.
I'm not sure how much he was played as a forward.
No, he wasn't. He was cutting in from the right, I think, and doing that. So he's a player that excites me. He always has a better second half holding the ball up than the first half.
I think he's a fantastic talent. I mean, from watching going all the way back to the pre-season friendlies, he is the signing that really excited me the most, I think. Just looking at his touch and the way that he can turn a player. Fair enough, we were playing non-league opposition, and you'd expect that of him, but he just made things happen. And he was very unlucky not to get any goals in that time. And I think we spoke about it in the pre-season preview. He just needs a goal, I think, and then the rest will follow.
I think he will always be. I still think Collins will be the striker. I think Collins will be the top scorer. I think he just has. I was talking about the last podcast when we were saying how Di Canio trying to tap him up, and I said I'd love it if we signed someone like used him as the prime example, up and coming hungry striker, and he went out and got him. And I think he's going to be good. He's been off form last couple of games, but fair play to him. He
broke
a hat-trick.
That hat-trick was the first one since Simon Cox
at Northampton. And also in a 4-3 victory.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Coincidence.
Yeah.
Coming next after Carlisle is a trip a little closer to home on the south coast, if Portsmouth survive until Tuesday, of course, which is no guarantee.
Mm. They probably will at the moment, though.
Yeah, that's all gone quiet last couple of weeks. I've not heard a lot about it, actually. I don't know what the latest is.
Yeah.
It seemed to switch to
Everyone
boom.
Keeps popping up, don't they? Sort of the Middle Easterns are back again. We got some money.
See, I think, going back to what we were talking about at the start of the podcast, that some of that money that these wealthy foreign people are plowing into football clubs should be going to Virgin Galactic tickets for Fern Cotton for a start. Andy Townsend, if we could put him into orbit, that would be really useful.
His family live in Swindon, by the way. Andy Townsend's family.
Do they?
They
ought to be ashamed of him. Moving on back to football.
No, Portsmouth. I mean, they had a fantastic victory last weekend at Crawley, 3-0 victory. Certainly, got that off their backs, and they've got a brand new team that hasn't played any pre-season together. They've all sort of come in at the last minute.
Yeah.
A bunch of loanies and sort of mercenaries, really.
It's got Brian Howard in there, haven't we? Ex Swindon Brian Howard.
Is he?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think. Yeah, well, Brian Howard and McLeod up front.
Playing for Southampton and going off to Portsmouth then, isn't he?
Did he play for Southampton? I thought he played for Barnsley.
Barnsley.
Reading.
Oh, Reading, that was it, yeah. But they've got that team, and we'll find out this weekend what the result is, but they're potentially
going to be able
to do a lot better than what people sort of imagine what they will do. I mean, they're certainly not going to be pushing for any promotion or any near playoffs, but they're not going to be the whipping boys.
I think they're going to survive as well, and I think that is the key thing for any Portsmouth fan, is that there's a club there left in the end.
I think they might do better. As long as they stay afloat, I think they might do better than you think. I think they might be, I don't know.
Could be a siege mentality there as well. There could be that everyone rallies together, but the problem is when you've got such a small squad,
it depends on their
luxury of the other teams around you to have two first 11s.
It depends where the injuries come in and sort of start to ravage their team and the pitch, you know, gets worse as the season goes on.
You can guarantee that De Canio is going to do his homework. You know, that's the one thing, whether we get results or not. Mm. He picks a system and he picks something that he thinks is going to work, rather than just throw them out there and hope for the best. So, you know, in Paolo we trust, really.
That's what he's thinking about when he's looking at his tomatoes. Yeah. He's thinking, right, that tomato there's Ferry.
Yeah.
If he comes close to Howard.
Yeah, which is now it's the...
But obviously we wish Portsmouth well after Tuesday, and nobody likes to see any clubs going under.
No.
Except Rangers.
Okay. All right, fair enough. There's probably going to be Rangers fans support, listen to this. Well done, Chris. You're kind of putting yourself against...
Not anymore.
No.
Right, let's wrap up then. So, all in all, we're all quite positive about what's going on, aren't we?
I think compared to what has gone on, I think you can only look at it in a positive light and move on. I think it's... De Canio is always going to come out with stuff, and he's always going to do it his way. You just kind of have to get, you know, it won't last forever. It'd be so interesting to see what happens when he does move on and where he goes and what
where
he chooses
to do. Well.
Because, again, he said in that article, didn't he? He said, manage Swindon maybe 2-3 more years, he said, then manage the Premier League, then manage England, take him to World Cup, win that, then go home and retire with his restaurants in Italy.
Do you know what? Yeah. I'd love him to be England manager. But I can't really take... I don't know how much more I can take as Swindon manager. I like him, but the erratic behaviour is something which is a concern for me, and also the amount of money that is spent as a result of that erratic behaviour, it's starting to become more and more of an issue for me.
It will be brilliant to look back in 5 years and see what was spent compared to, say, the Danny Wilson era. And just see if there was a difference. I know I don't really look at...
As far as I know, the budgets are very, very similar to what they were that season when we... Under Wilson had a season after, very similar, and again last year in League Two, you know, very similar budgets, were pretty much.
Yeah, and Sturrock even had a bit of cash when we got promoted last time. I seem to remember Painter and things.
They've always been quite well backed.
Yeah,
but ultimately they got
we're flush because we're not at the level that we should be at, though. Really, definitely. I think with fallen giants is too grandiose a term, but
very much so.
But we're certainly not, you know, at the level that we should be at, which is why we're wealthier than most of the clubs around us.
Yeah.
But we've come down rather than gone up. Mm. So,
but as we were just talking about, we now are our natural point where we have been for the most. It's just up to us to... I think we can be a very well-run championship club, and I'd be quite happy with that. For the Premier League is a completely different thing. And I think you need a completely different mentality as a supporter when you get to the Premier League.
I
can't see we're going to...
Well, you don't know.
No, you just don't know.
You know, I've seen Hull City play, and I know times are slightly different now from when they were in the base, but I've seen them play in that stadium, that old stadium that I can't remember now, to the new one, and I've seen how a team can change in 5-6 years or whatever it is. And that's still possible. The money is still there.
It is. It's about keeping the right personnel there for the right amount of time, basically. Yep. But I think that the financial gap certainly is widening from the League One and Two is almost like its own league.
Yeah, and that's what...
And the Championship, you know, where you've got Blackburn shelling out £8 million for a striker.
That's coming off a back. That you've got to remember. That's coming off parachute payments. That's a different thing. That's a team in despair trying to get back up to what they're trying. You know, it's almost like a Leeds thing. I don't know what financial backing Blackburn have. I know who they are. I know who the people are and stuff.
Financially, this year is quite interesting because next year the renegotiated television rights deal, which is far superior to the last one, kicks in.
Which is why you're seeing QPR winning. For finishing bottom than we currently do for winning the league. Is that right? Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So that's why QPR are spending big. That's why you're seeing a lot more... clubs are gambling a lot more on being in the Premiership for next season.
Whereas I don't think that's necessary. I don't think you need to be... I think that with the Championship... is kind of a really great level of football, and I think it's a really for business type things. And what Jeremy Ray and what Andrew Black, I think is it? What they're looking at is that's what they want, and I think that would be a great place for Swindon Town to be over the next few years. I think we should be happy with that. I certainly would be.
Right, let's finish there. Time for some plugs. What have we got on the site this week, Ron?
Well, the usual match reports, hopefully another Hall of Shame in the week. Not sure what I'll put up next, but we've got plenty. But I also want to just say is that, you know, if anyone wants to make any contributions to the site generally or in terms of provide a Hall of Shame, if you want to nominate someone, by all means get in touch via the email podcast@thewashbag.com. Just please get in touch. Really like to sort of, there's still plenty of Swindon bad moments, but yeah, and there's plenty of other things that could be included in terms of matches. There's plenty of contenders still to go in, so please get in touch.
Okay,
great.
That concludes the podcast. The next one will be recorded in the immediate aftermath of the Bournemouth game on the 22nd of September. It'll be live on the site thewashbag.com shortly afterwards. We're still after some chants, some songs. Don't know if Matt can help out. Maybe he's too busy. He's too busy doing his other things. The best one, the only one we've had so far, which is quite good, is Troy Archibald Henville, which you can.
That's really good.
You can imagine people singing.
He's just got to play, though, hasn't he?
He's just got to play.
He's got to come back from injury.
Well, he's rumoured to start
hopefully
tomorrow.
Hopefully, Carlo.
Yeah. So keep. Let's have some better ones, please. Paul Benson is long overdue a decent song, and we can't be singing about being champions anymore because we're not.
No,
we were champions last year of a different league. So,
but Man United do that. They're quite safe.
Well, that's another reason not to do it. I think is to separate ourselves.
Point well made. Duly noted.
Anyway, thanks for listening. If you have any feedback, please do get in touch. Podcast@thewashbag.com. Goodbye.